Hello, and welcome to Conversations Worth Having. We believe in the power of words. We believe that conversation is the key to deep personal and collective transformation, to a more connected, more fulfilling relationship with yourself and others. We believe that happiness is available to you right now in any given moment.
We discuss a variety of topics on health, wellness, and self-empowerment. We will talk about nutrition, mindfulness, spirituality, relationships, and, of course, the art of conversation. We passionately believe that it is the small incremental changes made consistently that lead to radical transformation and optimal well-being. So all of the topics we talk about will offer you insights into practical changes that you can implement to empower yourself and nourish mind, body, and spirit.
I'm Kesra, and I'm a nutritionist and functional medicine practitioner. My desire is to educate and empower people to achieve optimum health and happiness. I'm here to inspire others to show up wholeheartedly and live big, bold, and beautiful lives.
And I'm Ian. I'm a sports integrity lawyer and ethicist. Life is not about magic bullets, but incremental changes that mean today is a little better than yesterday, and tomorrow is a little better than today.
And we are Conversations Worth Having. Before we get started, a little disclaimer. This podcast is recorded from our homes in Italy and Portugal, respectively, and so you may hear the sounds of our neighbourhoods, the local wildlife, and very likely, my dogs in the background.
Hello, and today we're going to be talking about how to have better conversations. And what we mean when we say better is conversations that are more deeply connected. Now, this is actually the first in our conversation series. So we're going to be doing a whole series on how to have better conversations and looking at different groups with different conversations. So friends, co-workers, partners, romantic partners, and actually working on each of those in more detail, because actually they're all quite different in how we may approach those and look at how we can go deeper in each case. But today's a general one, which will apply to all of these situations. So we're going to be looking at how can we create more fulfilling and more connected relationships by having better conversations. And we're not talking about the anecdotal type of conversation. What we're talking about are the kind of conversations where we get vulnerable, where we really show up and we bond much deeper with the other person or people, if it's a group scenario, so that they're the type of conversations that can really lead to deeper transformation within our relationships.
Yeah, and I think that what we discussed in preparing for this, that there are many different types of conversation and people that we have conversations with. And so we do want to get more specific, but for now, what we're really trying to do is give you some tips on the general points that will always apply. And so that's what we're going to start with. We're going to cover how possibly to prepare for a conversation.
Well, that may come into it.
Down the line, I guess. How to be present in a conversation properly. Most importantly, probably how to listen really
Absolutely.
Well. How to deal with interruptions, or rather control yourself from interrupting. How to give space to introverts who may not have that sort of banter easily available to themselves. How not to impose a hierarchy in a conversation, and how to disagree a little bit, how to disagree well, and how to bring your point across without disrupting or undermining the conversation or the connection arising from it. And then we're going to tell you a little bit at the end about how what we're going to cover in the rest of our series, as Kes said in the intro. So
yeah, and also at the end, I think, you know, we're going to offer some tips on how you can have better conversations with some phrases and some little tidbits of that you can use and put into practice immediately to really kind of the key takeaways, I suppose, from our conversation today.
Yeah. So I think just to kind of kick it off on the first point I mentioned, not because it's necessarily a major point, but I think it's important in certain contexts where you are the initiator of the conversation. So sometimes you will be the person to whom the conversation is brought, where the topic is raised to you, but often you will want to have a conversation about something that is personal or vulnerable, or an area that, you know, that you might have some nervousness in raising but want to raise. And so in that respect, what we suggest, of course, is preparing how you're going to say that, but also, you know, that's a rehearsing issue in a sense, but also I think there's some value in a little bit of research. And what I mean by this is looking at the topic you want to raise, how it's dealt with by other people, how it's dealt with perhaps academically, you know, how certain people that you respect deal with the problem. So just as an example, if I was looking to raise a relationship issue, I'd want to back that up with something by Esther Perel.
And take some tips and advice that she gives around, you know, that maybe particular topic of a relationship.
And say a lifestyle issue around, I wanted to lose weight and I wanted support from my partner, I'd look at some of the tips that Rangan Chatterjee gives, you know, in terms of weight loss on his thing, just because I'd want to bring some points to the conversation, right? Now, of course, that applies to the person raising the issue. The main issue there, of course, is being courageous enough to raise it, right? So we're giving you the tips about how to prepare for the conversation, and it may be that the biggest obstacle isn't the preparation, it's just plucking up the courage.
Absolutely, which actually brings me on to my next point. When we're talking about preparing for the conversation, what we also mean by that is prepare yourself. You know, how do you prepare yourself, you know, mentally and emotionally for that conversation? And, you know, I think it's really, really important before we go into conversations, especially ones that can be deeply vulnerable and often quite triggering for both parties involved, to take time to really ground ourselves, to center ourselves and our thoughts, clear our minds. And that can be done in a variety of ways. You know, that can be done with breathing exercises. It can be done through a short meditation. It can also be done through prayer. I mean, something that I often do when I'm going into a situation with somebody else where I know things might come up, they'll be challenging, I often just say a very, very short prayer, and I just say, please allow me to speak my truth, but from a place of love and compassion. Help me to stay aligned, you know, in love, and to say what I need to say, and may this work out for the highest good of both individuals.
Oh, I think that's really, really good advice. And the thing to avoid, at least for me personally, but I'm sure this will apply to some of you listening, right, is I tend to rehearse whole conversations in advance. And then, of course, one minute in, the person gives the response you weren't anticipating, and your entire preparation
is out the window.
And so we're going to come on to the art of listening and all of this stuff as we carry on this conversation. But yeah, my advice would be avoid that. So it's not rehearsing the entire conversation. It's obviously preparing how you're going to introduce it. But Keza's advice there was actually the really important thing is to be ready for that conversation, and then to be courageous enough to start it at the right time. Okay, but not in the middle of an argument.
No, but one way that you can prepare, obviously I was talking there about preparing ourselves emotionally, but one way that we can practically prepare is to just write down some points. Because often when we kind of go into discussion, what with anxiety or fear, or if things get vulnerable or triggering, I think that often we can forget what we wanted to say. And we can kind of miss the points that maybe we wanted
to go off on massive
to bring
tangents.
Up. We go off on tangents. They say something that goes off. And sometimes we do have to, obviously we want things to be authentic and unfold organically, but also when there's a particular topic that we're bringing to the table that we really want to feel seen
you want to stick
on,
with it, don't
then
you?
we need to shape that conversation slightly. So I'd often just write down some key points that I want to cover in that. You know, and I don't, you know, I don't kind of go into that story of like, well, this is how the conversation's going to go, and this is exactly what I want to share. Yeah. But what I do is just write down the points and how they unfold, or, you know, maybe come up, or I present them. That is completely organic. And often I find that I haven't even thought about it in the conversation, but then at the end of the conversation, I check my list and I have actually covered all those points, but quite naturally. And that's just unfolded from their response, my response. But I think sometimes, it is important to just prepare yourself and be like, okay, this is what I want to say. This is the points I'd like to cover. And it's important that, you know,
that's
that
a really
gets
important
addressed.
Point.
It makes
from,
you feel more relaxed, I think, from the get-go.
For me as a lawyer, just you triggered it in the sense that I should raise this at the end, but I'll forget to raise it because it's not in my notes, is that we always used to ask the question at the end of examination of our own witnesses in court is, have you said everything you want to say?
Great question.
Because
we should
so
start
often,
asking that to each other.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
we
that's
should.
A great tip. That's a great conversational tip for the end.
Yeah, exactly. Is we've, you know, you'd get to a point in many conversations where the conversation is finished, and you know you're driving home or whatever you're doing, and you go, ah, I should have said, I've missed this point. I forgot this point, and that's such a horrible feeling. So both, you know, combining what Kez is saying in terms of preparing the points you want to cover rather than the course of the conversation, and then making damn sure at the end that you have covered all those points, but also, very importantly, asking your conversational partner, have you said everything you want to say?
Check in with
Don't
yourself
leave stuff.
And check in with them.
Yeah, cool.
And ask if there's anything else.
Oh,
yeah, that
glad
needs,
I remembered that.
That needs to be heard or seen. But no, I think that's a fantastic point. Absolutely.
Cross-examination.
Yes.
101 coming back.
Yes.
All right.
Except we are aiming away from these conversations. A bit feeling like a cross-examination for the other person.
Yeah, of course. Fair enough.
We should make that point.
Yes, it's hard to take the lawyer out of me sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think the next point, certainly on my list, that I wanted to bring up in this conversation is the need in this type of conversation, transformative or vulnerable or personal, very personal, is the absolute essential element of being present.
Yes.
And obviously, if you're the person who's bringing the conversation to the table, you're going to be present because it's your agenda. So now at this point, I think we're really talking to the person to whom the conversation is brought. You need to recognize, firstly, the courage it took for the person to bring this to the table and honor that courage with your presence, with your engagement. And for me, that needs to be shown. So it isn't simply just I am present. It's demonstrating that with eye contact, your body language, your facial expression, checking in with yourself about how your engagement is coming across. Signal your presence. Don't just assume that the person thinks you're present.
Practice active listening, where you can really engage, and obviously you're not interrupting that person, but you want to just say things like, yes, absolutely, or I hear you, or whatever it is that shows that you really are listening to what they're saying.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And present for that. And actually, you know, when we talk about being present, in order to be able to be present ourselves and show up, that goes back to my first point of being prepared. Because if we're already grounded, we are going to be able to be present because our mind isn't going off and making a story about the conversation. We're not projecting our own ideas onto it. We are just there for what it actually is for what that experience is in that moment. And we're not letting our fears run away with us or letting our fears hear things that aren't there in that conversation, right? Because maybe we're feeling triggered or we're feeling afraid or, you know, whatever might come up.
That's a really important point going back to preparation, actually, is that
it sets up the whole conversation. It's
but it's also not ambushing somebody with a conversation.
Yeah.
So part of the preparation is warning somebody what you're going to talk about if it's deeply personal and vulnerable.
So they have their own chance.
They've
to
got
prepare.
A chance. Because,
and so actually on that topic, I want to bring up this and I need to ground myself.
Yeah. I mean, this sort of thing is not something you as you're about to doze off at 11:30 at night, your partner rolls over and goes, I think I'd like to evaluate our relationship. And you're like, what?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is actually the typical scenario.
Yes,
because, you know, your partner's been sitting there stewing on this conversation for probably 2 or 3 days and decided, right, it's coming up now.
Yeah.
And you're just blindsided by this, and then you get a lousy reaction, right? I mean, it's inevitably shitty that you sit there going, because then you lash back.
They're triggered,
because
they get
feels,
defensive, you're triggered, and it becomes very difficult.
So, give some warning jumping back to point number.
And actually, you've reminded me of a really great tip on that point, and I want to mention it now in case I forget later. But one thing I often do, you know, especially with, you know, a partner, but also with friends and family, you know, if you have a trust and a deep bond with somebody, it's very easy to be fairly vulnerable from the get-go. And what I'll often do is make sure that we have grounded ourselves before we start the conversation. So actually, you may sit down with that person and say, before we start, you know, can we take 3 deep breaths together and just connect. Let's connect before we start.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a really simple thing, but it can make all the difference.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah,
you know, because really good. Say you end up meeting in a cafe or, you know, you've been on the tube, you're rushing around, you arrive and you're flustered. You may have grounded on the train, but by the time you get there, you're ungrounded again.
Yeah.
And actually, you see them and you get butterflies and, you know, ideas come into your head. And it's like, actually, you know, you can... sometimes we need to ground and reground.
Yeah.
And actually, in order to be present in that moment... Maybe do that again.
There's a big difference between preparing for a conversation and then being actually confronted by the person you want to have
completely
that conversation with.
And everything just goes out the window.
Yeah,
the thing is that, you know, clarity can be really hard to get in a moment of a conversation, which is why that preparation is so important. And then we're much more likely to be present.
Yes.
So a great way of being able to be present with a person is to just do that exercise with them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a really good idea. I probably should have known this 20, 30 years ago. I might have some friends.
But it can be really vulnerable
to
sit with someone in silence and say, let's just take some deep breaths together. That can be a really hard thing to initiate, you know, when, you know, it can be very difficult.
Good. Yeah. So, now, of course, the core element of any good conversation is listening.
Yes.
By far the most important thing. So the point I wanted to make on this is because I know that it seems blindingly obvious, but you know, a lot of what we do is not listening, it's hearing. We can hear somebody's talking, but we're not really listening.
Oh, that's such an important distinction because it's very, very different.
Yeah, and of course, you know, it goes back to the previous point about being present and the point Kez made, but the point I'd want to make on this is that I used to hear a saying very often, because I am a lawyer, was don't listen like a lawyer with your mouth open. And what we do is that we're always ready halfway through what somebody is saying with our response and waiting to make that response. And so our attention is on our response and crafting it. So
absolutely,
what I'm suggesting is that you just listen without judgment, without preparing your response. Wait till what has been said has been said, and then respond from your heart and presence, rather than rehearsing your response the way that I did as a lawyer.
Preparing
and most
it as they're
do.
Still talking, because you miss, really, don't you? You've really kind of crafted your reply, and then things might change, and you've kind of, you know, it's not authentic.
Half the person's sentence or sentences have taken kind of a second tier to your prepared response that's now running around in your head, the brilliant point you're about to make, as always, or rebuttal or argument. And so, listening is an art.
It is a skill to be learned. We think that it comes very naturally to us. But I remember when I was doing my nutrition qualification, and one of the things that we were taught when we started working with clients in clinic was how to actively listen. Because of obviously when people are sharing deeply vulnerable things about their health or, you know, what's going on for them. And we asked some very personal questions. And we learned a lot about how to create a rapport and a trust with our client, you know, with the other person. And actually, I realized back then that, as you say, you know, it is a skill, and it's something that doesn't always come naturally. And we really do have to work at. We have to be very conscious that we have to really make an effort to really hear that the other person.
And I, you know, let me talk to the men listening to this in particular. we are problem solvers by nature. You know, this is a gendered issue. And so we're thinking of solutions while somebody's telling you something deeply vulnerable, where their purpose and what they want out of this may simply be to tell you and to be heard, to be listened to and sympathized with, rather than us going, oh, a problem, brilliant, I'm in my zone.
Let me fix it.
Let me fix it.
Quick.
Right? And so you're listening with a view to fixing rather than just listening. So, you know, be conscious of this. And half of what we're saying here is really not so much common sense, but a matter of being aware.
Yeah, just developing that consciousness, being more conscious. Yeah.
I mean, again, I wish I'd known this. You know, I've learned so much. And part of the reason that we set up Conversations Worth Having in the first place is the art of conversation that developed between Kezra and I, where I had Yeah, I came to it with that masculine lawyer thing where everything that once we got to know each other a little bit better in the course of our work, I took to be a problem to solve until I was very gently told that that was not the point of...
Sometimes we just need to be heard. We just need to feel seen and we just need to feel heard. And we don't always want solutions, you know, and often we have to get there ourselves. But actually the most healing thing in a moment can be to just feel heard, which is why I think, you know, listen is such an important one. And on that point, you know, when we say listen, I think it's really important to make a distinct. Another distinction is that don't just listen to what is being said.
Mm-hmm.
Also listen to the body language, right? To the energy that's come, that you know, that person is expressing and what's really coming out. Because quite often someone can say one thing, but actually...
I really love your friends.
It can,
oh, good, yes, I'm glad.
but it can be very different. Yeah. It can be very different.
Yes.
And so I think it's really, really important to listen... both with our ears, but also really look with our eyes and listen to the body language and really create that whole picture, which obviously, you know, is a lot easier in person, which is why video chat is much better, I think, sometimes than a telephone call. If you really, you know, as we're in the time of lockdown, I think it's important to make a distinction where in-person conversations can be quite hard at the moment. So actually, if you end up in a situation where you want to have a conversation like this, but you cannot meet and it can't wait, then always do video over a phone call, because then there's so much language. And again, another thing I learned with my qualification, there's a language that is, you know, an unspoken language, and it's the language of the body, and that is very, very important. So you know, learning to the body language that you give off and the body language that you read of somebody else, and both are equally important in that setting. You know, very open body language, very closed body language. And it's actually very interesting. You can go and I looked this stuff up online when I was learning, because we had to actually practice what our body language was towards a client and how we looked and how open and receptive we were in order to be able to create a kind of trust and rapport. And it can come very naturally to some of us, but it doesn't always. Because if we're feeling anxious, you know, or shy, then we might have a more kind of closed off body language. But the thing is that, you know, we have these very primal instincts and we might not be conscious of it, but we are intuitively picking up on this.
Yeah.
And so it is important to start bringing this to awareness, because it is having an impact on our ability to connect properly with the other person. And on that note, I do want to talk about intuition. Because I think, you know, when we listen and we fully listen, we should also be listening to our intuition and what is coming up. And if we're fully present, you know, we're more able to do that.
And I'm suddenly conscious that I'm nodding and we're not on video.
Yes,
I'm agreeing.
Yes. So intuition is a really important one with listening. Listen and allow your intuition to really hear that and what response comes up for you.
Yes.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, and again, intuition is something that you can develop.
Yes.
You know, speaking to men again, it's a feminine quality.
It comes very naturally when I think we start to be more aware.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would say that that element of my ability has improved dramatically because I've tapped into it. I've deliberately allowed it to develop and to trust it, which was more the case. It was kind of there, but I never listened to it.
Yeah.
So yeah, don't give up hope on that one, because it is super important in, particularly obviously in in-person conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the subject of listening, I think the final point for me is that what is equally as important as what somebody does say is what they don't say. Because so often, I think, if we're expecting a certain response or we want a specific response, it's so easy for us to put our projections onto things.
Yeah.
And especially we do this when, you know, something is not said, and then we can kind of twist it and move it to fit what we would maybe perhaps like it to be or would like it to mean. But actually, we give so much away by what we don't say. And I think quite often we don't ever listen to what isn't being said. We don't go, okay, hang on, there's a discrepancy here between, you know, what was said or what wasn't said. Or you kind of go, well, actually, when I brought up this point, what they didn't have a response for,
or they moved away from
it, or they didn't want to talk about it. Absolutely,
yeah,
deflected from it.
Yeah.
And that tells you so much about, you know, as well. So also listen to what isn't being said. I think that's a really, really key.
Yeah, that is.
Because that informs
point.
Us as much as what is being said.
Yes. Yeah. No. That is a great point.
And if you're really listening, you will hear that. You know, you will hear.
Yes. That. Yes. Yeah. Good active listening has to include that.
Yes.
Which of course brings us on to, you can't really listen if you're interrupting, which, you know, is my lawyer point about listening with your mouth open and kind of trying to jump in when somebody clearly hasn't concluded their point.
Oh my God, you know what I'm so bad at? Finishing people's sentences. Honestly, it's the most annoying habit, and I can see myself doing it where, and you know what, you know why I do it? I do it because I really want them to see that I'm engaged and that I'm listening so intently I can finish their sentence for them, because I'm like, you know. And
yeah,
I'm like,
we both
gosh,
do that.
It's probably really frustrating that I never allow the other person to really finish. And actually, I've completely assumed what I think they're going to say. And, you know, 90% of the time, it is actually right. But when it isn't, it can be quite rude or, yeah, an interruption. So I'm trying to get better at not doing that. But it is a habit that I think I've created in trying to make people feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
And you know, kind of, yeah, help with the flow of conversation. But it can have the opposite effect.
Yes. And that's why I wanted to raise it, because, you know, I'm an introvert. I mean, it's a common sense rule of conversation, right? Interruption doesn't generally help the flow, particularly in a personal or vulnerable situation. But the reason I raise it specifically was to cover off the point that, particularly for introverts, they need a bit of space to think. And look, in one conversation, of course, this is a relevant point to give somebody time to respond, because not everybody can respond, you know, as sharply as an extrovert might.
Absolutely.
But particularly in a conversation involving more than two people, what tends to happen,
especially if it's a room full of extroverts.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
everybody's kind
one
of
or two
firing off each other
and bouncing off. Yeah.
There's a person standing there in the group, and I've been in this situation many, many times, where, you know, I feel like I've got a strong point to make, but I need a little bit of time to construct that point.
Yeah.
But long before I get to make it, somebody's jumped in and the conversation's moved on, and you kind of have to drag it back to your point.
Yeah.
And I think being
conscious...
And
that can be hard to do as well then, because you feel like you're regressing the conversation, so you
just don't.
You just give up and...
So, oh, you know, Bob is always quiet in the room.
Mm.
So, well, he
Bob's
may actually have a lot to contribute, a lot of wisdom and insight, but nobody's giving him the space to do it.
Mm.
So be conscious of who you're talking to and their personality type as well, because your conversation will be a lot better when you give people the space to make their points.
Absolutely. And I've noticed this so much with friends of mine, you know, when we get together and there's a group of us, and there are one or two of us in the group who are certainly more introverted by nature, but I know have a lot to say. And I'm quite aware in a group setting, and I'm quite observant, and I'm also an empath by nature. And I do tend to pick up on what's going on for other people. And that can be both a blessing and a curse. But what I have often noticed is one of my friends in particular, who she starts trying, you know, saying something, but then someone else jumps in and she really wants to make a point. But actually, when that space isn't allowed, you can see her sinking further and further inward and kind of closing off, because there just isn't that space for her to feel heard and feel seen. And that can be, you know, that can be really quite...
Oh, it really happens. I mean, it's a strong trait in my family, as you know, right? As, you know, both me, my sons, we all struggle in a group situation. I think partly because I'm deaf, but yeah. No, but yeah, I need a little bit of time to make my point, and I often feel like I'm shrinking away from a conversation because I'm not getting that gap.
Well, when you can't engage, when you can't join in, your engagement after, there's only so long you can really listen for before you feel that you have nothing to contribute. So I think a part of you switches off.
Yeah.
And
oh,
you're
I
no longer
I just
you're no
walk away because I'm old and rude. I do. I'm going like, well, I'm not getting a word in edgeways here, and I just drift off, or I zone out, you know.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that, you know, and that really breeds a very strong disconnect very quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, can really contribute to a lack of confidence and you know, low self-esteem, and you know, and also not just introverted people by nature, people who do struggle a bit more with confidence in group settings, or anxiety even, and find, you know, those group settings quite overwhelming, encouraging them to speak, you know, giving them the opportunity to speak. And I don't mean putting people on the spot, but gently inquiring, you know, what do you think about that?
You
know?
You look like you had a good point to make.
Exactly.
About this.
Yeah, that's a great one. Or you know, you look like you had a, you were thinking about something there, and that looked like a great point. And yeah, totally.
And I think there's an element of the next point, and I'm sure Kez has more to say about this. But it's about the hierarchy as well. Is that particularly in group settings, if in a work setting or in a family setting, a hierarchy kicks in and people don't feel the space, both from a point of view potentially of their introversion, but also from the point of view of their status in the group. And I think if you, again, if you want to have a good conversation, you've got to dispense with the hierarchy. And the obligation to do that really sits with the person at the top of a conventional hierarchy, the father,
so
mother,
yes.
you know, or the boss or the manager or somebody, to create that space. So be conscious of the differential between the persons or people that you're having the conversation with, and give them the freedom, grant them that space. And make sure they understand that in the context of the conversation, everybody's equal. Everybody's got something to contribute, and that you want to hear from them. That their point is not less value.
Absolutely,
than
That's
anyone else.
Point.
Is not laughed off as the junior in the conversation, because that happens a lot in a group context.
It does.
You know, in terms of your. The person who considers himself the alpha, or the woman who thinks of herself as the, as the pack leader, comes in and kind of dominates the conversation and quells the contribution of others, where that contribution may be very valuable. So again, self-consciousness, or rather self-awareness, is important when you're involved in a conversation. Be aware if you are the extrovert who is the life and soul. Be aware that you are that person, and hold yourself back and give people space.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think you're right. There is a dynamic, especially within family dynamics or friendship groups. There can be this kind of dynamic that develops as a result of all those kind of different personalities that are part of that dynamic. And so we start to know that those are the kind of louder, more extroverted people, and these are the more quiet, introverted people. And this dynamic can get very set in, and it can kind of be a very established dynamic where we just thought, okay, well, that's how it is. This is going to be difficult. You know, you just know that's how it is.
Yeah.
You know, if you're certainly in the kind of quieter, you know, part of that dynamic, you know, if you're not and you're an extrovert, fine, you're probably always going to love that. But I think it is really important to know that dynamic can be shifted when we're conscious about it. And we, as you said, it has to be the person who's more at the top of that hierarchy that consciously says, let's make more room for other people and for everybody's opinion and viewpoint. And you know, even if we have to get back to the basics and bring out a talking stick, you know, and just be really, you know, be really silly with it. We have to make adjustments.
If you are one of those people who feels that, you know, that you have a contribution to make that is being suppressed, is to find the courage to jump in and make your point.
Yeah.
Not so much, you know, on the point itself, but to do that at the beginning of a conversation. Say, you know, hey guys, this is something I'm really interested in, but usually, you know, we just hear from you two. I've got something to say about this.
I would have liked to have been asked, or, you know, and I have actually quite often in a group setting that can be difficult.
Yes, I know.
But sometimes maybe had someone come up to me, like a friend or a friend of a friend in a more group situation afterwards, come up to me and say, actually, I really wanted to say this, or I really thought about this, or I wanted to make that point, but didn't maybe feel confident or able to, or there wasn't time, you know, because of other people jumping in that scenario, but still wanted to be, you know, feel seen or feel heard. And so we had a private conversation afterwards, you know, but sometimes, yeah, people do, they will, won't they? They will pluck up the courage and say, actually, I didn't feel seen. And then, you know, we'll turn around and we'll say, oh gosh, I'm so sorry. Because it's done very unconsciously.
Oh,
we
absolutely.
Don't mean to do it, but we do it. So you're right. Important to be aware of that.
Yeah. Yes. Did you want to say anything more about interruptions and hierarchies and introverts? Because Otherwise, I think that the final kind of main topic for us is really around how to disagree. Mm. Now, we're definitely going to do a whole separate podcast on this, because it's a topic that is, you know, well, deserves that, doesn't it? Because there's an art to good disagreement. There's a hierarchy of ways of disagreeing, you know.
And by disagreement, what we mean is we're not talking about having argumentative conversations. What we're actually talking about is healthy debate.
Yeah.
And how can we have healthy debates? By healthy, we mean compassionate and, you know, empathetic and respectful debates.
It's how to hear somebody, but not if you don't agree with them. How do you convey that disagreement?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this isn't about arguments and debates at all, because, you know, again, we'll probably do a separate one on arguments, because that's a different thing, is how to cope.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call that a conversation. It's just two people shouting points at each other and trying to win.
Yes, I agree.
What we're dealing with is, because that's a win-lose thing, an argument, isn't it?
Mm.
We're dealing with win-win here. We're looking at conversation where both people come out better in terms of understanding, of their relationship, their connection, their bond. And so we will be covering disagreement separately.
Mm.
But in the meantime, before that comes up, where you disagree, think very carefully about how you convey that disagreement. And do it politely. Come from love and compassion. I mean, this underlines literally everything we ever say, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Come from love and compassion. Because if you ask that question, how would love respond? How would compassion respond here? You'll get a very, very different answer to how does my ego wish to respond here?
Mm.
How does my anger wish to respond? How does my vulnerability wish to respond? You know, you will get it. Take that, you know, three or four breaths before and consider the way in which you agree, not simply what you disagree about.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think when things can get triggering, we can get defensive, and it can trigger things within us that actually put our defenses up. And so we might be disagreeing from that place, from a more trauma-based place.
Yeah.
Or it may be more that just is our real belief and our real opinion, and we disagree for that reason. So, you know, afterwards, I actually like to reflect on a conversation and think about what came up for me and think about, well, why did I... I found that triggering in that conversation. Why was I triggered by that?
Mm.
And then I might, you know, spend some time reflecting on that, so I have a clearer and more conscious understanding of, you know, why did I disagree? You know, or why was that so triggering? And then I can really start to understand the difference a bit more. And I think there is a really big difference as well. And I want to make this distinction between it's okay to share our personal viewpoint and our opinion if that disagrees with someone else's, but what we're not trying to do is push people into adopting our viewpoint.
Yes.
Right, we're just saying, okay, I really hear you, and I see that that's yes, but in my opinion this is how I view it, this is how I see it. Or I often say, but this is my experience.
Yeah,
you know, like, oh, that's a shame, okay, yeah, that makes sense, but actually in my experience this is how I feel about that, and this is how I view this. But it's not about being like, oh, well, no, you're wrong. You should
see
it this way.
Yeah.
And I think that's often...
Yeah, I want you to change your mind about this.
Exactly. It's about going, okay, well, it's just really interesting. You know, thank you.
Again,
it's really interesting to hear your point of view. Because I see it this way.
Yeah.
You know? And exactly. It's not an argument.
I was always trying to beat somebody in an argument, right?
It's
to win, is to have them go, yes, you're right.
There's no wrong or right.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course there is.
No, there isn't.
But this sort of issue always comes up in conversations around sensitive issues like politics, obviously, religion, obviously, relationship,
more kind
sex.
Of confrontational.
You know, where these things are generally opinion based rather than kind of
factual,
and truth based.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, who you are as a person gets attacked when somebody says that you're wrong about something, and so that's best to be avoided. And we'll give some good tips on how to deal with disagreement properly in a full episode.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So, I'm done on good conversation as a general point. Have you had said everything you want to say?
I have, apart from some takeaway tips, really.
Oh, yeah.
One thing I did want to bring up is, I don't know if you will have heard about nonviolent communication, but it's, you know, it's it's a really interesting kind of set of practices based around having better communication with people and by non-violent communication. Really what it's talking about is how can we have those deeper connected conversations that don't turn into arguments? You know, how do we both, in a triggered specifically situation, get our points across in a compassionate manner, you know, non-violent communication. It's also called NVC for short. And one of the techniques that it teaches, and I really love this one, so I wanted to share it with you, is instead of saying in a conversation, you make me feel X, which can be quite kind of, it can lead to confrontation and argument because it's quite accusational. You do this, you make me feel that, is to instead try, when you say this or when you say that, it makes me feel. So rather than you make me feel, when you say
you
or do that,
it
makes me feel this. Isn't it far
God
more approachable?
Yes.
Don't you feel less defensive and triggered?
No, exactly.
It's a really great tip. So
All right. That's
one takeaway I'd like to give is to perhaps try looking at the language that you use. Do a bit of research into nonviolent communication and some of the tips and techniques that it offers, because there's some really easy takeaways if you kind of look at that online. And you know, you can even do courses, so it might be something you want to go into deeper. But it's I have a friend who, you know, who's really, really interested in that side of things. And she's often coming up with things that I go, gosh, that makes so much more sense, you know.
Yeah.
And that's such a much more beautiful way of saying that.
Hmm.
Because that's what we really
Might
mean.
Might make a good podcast.
You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Have that as a conversation.
I think so. I think it would be a great, really
cool.
interesting
oh,
topic.
That does sound interesting.
For sure. So, yeah, another tip I'd like to give for kind of conversation as well is to... You know, and this might, if in the kind of general conversation where we want to maybe kind of bond with someone or create a deep bond, and this is often, I think, maybe more prevalent in a newer relationship that you're trying to develop, is to share something about yourself with that person.
Mm.
Because when we share something about ourselves, we invite the other person to also open up and share something about their life. You know, we're creating, we're getting a little bit vulnerable, and that's how we develop trust in a relationship, is to share things that might be personal to us. And that doesn't mean, you know, we just got sharing personal information just like that. You know, we have to have an understanding that that person is the person we want to share that information with. And I don't mean going deeply personal very fast, but certainly kind of just starting to open up a bit more and allowing and giving that person the permission to do the same. You know, and that can just, it's a very simple thing, because I think so often, especially in those new relationships, we'll talk very generally about things, but as soon as we make it more intimate and more personal to ourselves, that's when things really start to connect. And I certainly know that when I meet people for the first time and I've got to know them and we kind of do a few things together, that actually when I really start to bond with them is when we have shared something with each other that's personal to us, that means something to us, that has some weight to it. And, you know, that's a really, really great way to start building connection or deepen a bond if you want to kind of develop a friendship with someone or a relationship with somebody.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely
and
true.
And it's very simple and easy to do.
You kind of expand the boundaries of what's an acceptable topic in our relationship, right? You
exactly.
take that big
exactly.
kind of leap outwards going, yeah, we can talk about this kind of
exactly.
stuff now.
Exactly, it's safe to, I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And you're showing that you that you trust them. It's a way of showing your trust and then inviting them to do the same.
Yeah.
And that's a very useful one as well. And this one I particularly love. And, you know, I do this with friends and family, partners. And it's, I think that so often there are phrases that we use, certainly, you know, in the UK, that can be very offhand. And quite often we say to someone, oh, how are you doing? Or what's up? We're not actually really asking how they are.
Yeah, no, we'd be shocked if they told the truth.
Exactly. The response you expect from that is, oh, fine, good, yeah, okay. You don't expect them to turn around and go, well, actually, you know, this is what's going on for me.
Mm.
And so I think that we have to invite that conversation when we really want to go deeper. We have to actively invite that conversation.
Yeah.
So this can feel really, really vulnerable at first and really hard.
Mm.
And you might have someone look at you like you're completely mad to begin with. But actually, if you know there's a certain level of trust and connection between you, then of course, you know, it won't be so bizarre. But instead of how are you, I always say to the person, how is your heart?
Mm.
because that's not a question that you can answer with okay, really. I mean, you could, but yeah. You're more likely to kind of go, well, actually, right. I'm feeling quite anxious today. And then that will lead into a conversation where you can feel seen and heard. Or, well, actually, I feel quite sad, or, you know, whatever is going on for you. Yeah. And when someone asks me that question, I will sit for a minute and I will actually feel into what feelings are coming up for me. Because when we say, how are you, often we can just, you know, we're thinking more than we're feeling. Whereas I think when you ask, how's your heart, you automatically switch to looking deeper at feeling. And feeling is where lies the answers of what's really going on for us. So I think that can be a really, really beautiful and simple one for connecting deep with someone, especially, you know, that kind of thing is often at the beginning of a conversation. So it can be a really great way to start.
It leads somewhere as opposed to the stock. Hey, how are you? Oh, I'm fine.
Exactly.
So unless somebody expands on that, you've got to start a different topic.
Yeah, for sure. And then kind of, you know, throughout conversation, often saying things like, I hear you, or I understand, you know, I really hear that, can really show that we're listening. It's a great way to actively listen to people, and to show that we're really engaging. And another great one is to use more open questions, more leading questions. So for instance, rather than saying something like, how was your, did you have a good weekend? Which is a kind of yes or no answer almost. Saying, well, how was your weekend? What did you get up to this weekend? You know, what did you do at the weekend? So it invites a kind of story to be told or more information to be given than just those kind of questions that are very yes or no, lead to yes or no answers. So more open questions. And if you Google, you know, open-ended questions, you know, you'll find millions. There's so many great, you know, ways of kind of looking at those things. So, you know, those are some very simple tips for engaging deeper. And can just be very useful phrases or kind of concepts to look at addressing and bringing into conversation.
Yeah, brilliant. And obviously, we're called Conversations Worth Having for a reason. And so a great deal of what we talk about, even if it's not specifically about how to have a conversation or types of conversation, is dealt with best, I think, or integrated, embodied best through conversation.
Absolutely.
And so what we always wanted from CWH was for people to engage with whatever topic we cover. For example, you know, if we talk about gratitude practice or something like how to cope with lockdown, we want people to have conversations about that, both with us and with other people, to develop the idea, because we learn from conversation. So it's not a case of standing as if we're on a stage telling you how to do things like an instruction manual. We're learning and through conversation, because that's how this whole thing started for us. And so we think that that's a valuable method for you as well. And so engage with us really deeply from our own experience with both with each other and with others, that we are going to learn from you.
Oh, absolutely. And we learn so much from each other, you know, and I think we can inspire each other and we can empower each other by having those discussions and starting conversations on these topics, because you never know where they're going to lead. And everybody has something to contribute. But more importantly, everybody has something unique to contribute. You know, you are you. We are all individuals and we all bring something very different to the table, and perspectives and viewpoints that can, when we talk about them, really shape how we see the world and how we see things. And that's how we learn, that's how we grow, that's how we find what works for us, what resonates, what doesn't, and helps us to really hone, you know, our authenticity and what's true for us. And I think it's really important to engage and have those conversations to help our own growth and also to inspire others as well. You know, that's the power of connection, that's the power of community. And it's really... yeah, it's really vital to our well-being and to our growth and to our sense of empowerment. So please do engage with us. We'd love to hear if you have any conversation tips or ideas or things that really work for you, and what your thoughts are on our on our chat today.
Brilliant. Thanks very much for listening.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please do share with your friends and family if you think they will love it too. Don't forget to click subscribe so you don't miss any in future. We are here to share ideas, start transformative conversations, and thrive as a community.
We want to engage with you and always love to start a conversation. So please do get in touch with us. Feel free to comment, ask questions. We're here for you, and we learn as much from you as you may learn from us.
Over on our website, you can find a variety of free resources, such as meditations, journal exercises, recipes, and more, as well as workshops and courses, all built around the topics we discuss here on the podcast. To learn more, visit us at conversationsworthhaving.co.uk. See you next time.